they introduced, oh, this is, you know, Leo Cullen. He's now the head of Leinster Rugby. And I was just like, where's Leinster? Like, oh, dude, I'm excited for the possibility of playing a lot more for Ireland. Some days, like I said, you get run over. Some days you run over people. It's a roller coaster, man. There's never a rugby career that's always on the up.
Hi, everyone. I'm Conor Nolan, and welcome to The Sit Down, the podcast that explores the mindset, motivations, and opinions of the elite talent and brands represented by Sport Endorse. Sport Endorse is a sports management agency specializing in endorsements and commercial partnerships between athletes and organizations. Our brand new platform connects brands and athletes directly to engage and negotiate commercial opportunities and ensure alignment between brand objectives and athlete values. The platform ensures full transparency and offers an authentic sponsorship experience. Whether you're an athlete seeking sponsorship or a brand that would like to engage with any of our talent, check out the Sport Endorse platform at www.platform.sportendorse.com or download the Sport Endorse app through the Apple Store or Google Play. Today's guest is Leinster and Ireland rugby player James Lowe. Born in New Zealand, James is one of Ireland's top sporting talents, initially making a name for himself as a scoring threat for Leinster before making his international debut for Ireland against Wales in 2020. As you'll hear, this was one of those rare occasions when the recording was forgotten and the conversation flowed freely. Enjoy. So James, you're very welcome and thank you for joining us on The Sit Down.
Cheers, dude. No hassle. Good to be here.
I've taken you away from probably one of the few days we've had good weather here in Ireland, so I'm going to try and not keep you for too long.
Yeah, I know. This is day three of, day three of summer, and it hasn't disappointed yet, so.
Yeah, not yet. Not yet, unfortunately.
Oh, the rain's coming. It always does.
We'll stay optimistic. So listen, I suppose, take us back to the beginning, first of all. What got you started playing rugby?
So I was, I would have been 4 or 5 playing rugby. I always watched it as a kid, and it was something I guess I was drawn to. I played every sport under the sun growing up, from cricket, a little bit of soccer, rugby, touch, athletics. There was softball, volleyball, basketball, like literally everything you could ever imagine. But it always kind of came back to rugby. And ever since I was young, you know, I had a passion for it. I was good. I was always a little bit bigger than all the other kids. Made it a bit easier when you're 6 years old. And, you know, Dad told me I'd get $1 a try and ended up with a pie on the way home. So kept me coming back.
That's a pretty good motivator, all right. And I suppose you've led me there to something which I wanted to ask you, because you mentioned you're on school, you played everything. You're perhaps a little bit modest. You're a school's athletic champion at both junior and senior level, representing New Zealand in basketball. I mean, you could have gone down the NBA route like Steve Adams.
I wouldn't quite go that far. Steven Adams made an absolute mockery of me. And we were playing in an under-19s tournament. And he was worlds apart. Like, honestly, he was a year younger than us. And like his team won. He'd been playing basketball for a year, and he was pretty much from then, like, I was like, jeepers, there hasn't been many Kiwis in the NBA, but if there was someone to make it, it was going to be this dude. And hopefully one day I do get to meet him, because he was chirping me on the court as well. Like, I remember running back, he'd blocked me or something. Like, I was never a very good shooter. I was always a little bit more physical than other people, so I'd always manage to get my way into the key, and he'd just be standing there just blocking shots. And we're running up the court, and he was just like, you're too small. Like, I was just like, no, this can't be happening to me. But yeah, like, I wouldn't quite go that far, man. Like, I was handy enough at other sports, but there's no way I'd make it in the NBA.
All right. Well, listen, lack of skills and aside, you know, what was it ultimately that made you kind of commit to the rugby?
Like, in New Zealand, there's like a definitive pathway as well. Like, through schoolboy stuff, you know, you're talking rep teams, you're talking academies, you're talking, there'd always be, you know, a dude at all your sort of big games as a 16-year-old, there'd be a dude on the sideline with a Crusaders hat on and stuff. I was in Crusaders country, you know, so there'd always be that influence, and you kind of always knew that there were, like, if you played well enough, there was literally stepping stones to whatever you wanted to achieve. And I was always more passionate about rugby as well. I always looked forward to rugby a lot more. And, you know, it was a no-brainer in the end. When I was 18, I got to play New Zealand schoolboy rugby And I remember after the game, I got given, our coach got given this, like, this card. It was like an agent card. And I was just like, who's this dude? Like, what's he want? And then all of a sudden, I had just like random people ringing me. And I was just like, dude, like, what are you on about? I'm like 18 years old. Like, I'm not going to like leave home or anything. They wanted me to go play league. So I was like offered out of school as an 18 year old. Like, there was literally like a 2 year contract to go up, live in Auckland and play in the Warriors under 20s team. And I was just like, holy, like, and it was at the time. And I mean, still is, it's a lot of money, like all of a sudden, but like, there was no way I could leave home. I wasn't mature enough, I don't think. Like, I'm a bit of a homeboy as well. So like, that didn't even like, oh, cool, that's there. But like, I've never played this sport. I'm not going there. Like, so I stayed in Nelson. I signed up for the academy. I was on for the year. I was on $1,500 New Zealand dollars for the year. And that was like, mate, that was a good one. That was one of the good ones. Some of the boys were only on 500, and it wasn't full time, but I mean, it was a serious enough commitment, you know. And then I'd stay and play club rugby. I'd train with them three times a week. I'd be in their gym four times a week, you know. And that's kind of how I, like, that was my first ever, you know, semi-pro contract I'd signed. And when I was 19, the year after, I signed to actually play for the, you know, the senior team. And that was semi-pro, so that was for the Tasman Marco. And, you know, we weren't good then. like the success that they're having now was because we had 7 years of absolute torture beforehand. They've just gone back-to-back. They could easily do it again this year. And we're a small province in a pretty big pond, so I'm absolutely stoked for what they're doing. But, you know, I signed my first contract at 19, and I actually got knocked out, and it's the only time I'd ever really been knocked out, and it was the first ever experience of concussion. And back then, we're talking 2011, 2012, like, it wasn't, you know, you get knocked out, you're grand, you wake up. And I went loopy, man. Like, I went full circle. I was repeating myself in the changing room and stuff. I was like asking where my parents were and stuff. Like, we're like an hour and a half away from my hometown. My parents weren't at the game. Like, I was so confused. And then all of a sudden, I just woke up on my bed, and that was my first year of professional rugby. You know, I was out for six games. Yeah, like, that's literally my journey to how I got to becoming a professional, I guess. Yeah.
And I suppose from there, that probably led you, or was it, you know, kind of a springboard then for, you know, your international career. And, the All Blacks, your university considered the benchmark in rugby. You were selected for the Maori All Blacks in 2014 and 2016.
Yeah.
So, good experience.
Yeah, that was awesome. So I guess, yeah, so that was, what, 2012. And then from there, the year after, I actually got to play a full season, which was nice. I actually, because it was semi-pro, I was still working. So I started off actually in the summer. They needed people to run the recycling, so on the back of a recycling truck, and that's actually what I first did. And weirdly enough, actually working in such a, I actually loved the job. Like, it was so cool. 7:30 in the morning, you're at the yard, dudes are having fags, like getting ready to run for the day. But the incentive was, it was like, the quicker you run, the quicker you do your route, the quicker you get to go home. So like 7:30, like, I'd be finished at 1 some days, you know. So like, and it was kind of a good thing, because it got me used to running the whole time as well. So my fitness levels increased. I got paid a full day's work for 4 hours work. I could train around it. The running wasn't too crazy. You could run as much as you wanted, but I was just quite efficient at it. And then I was also working at an after school program, and then, you know, I was going to training after, and then I had to go and, you know, play professional rugby. So it was kind of like something in me was like, yeah, I want to really have a crack at rugby. And I played really well in 2013, ended up being picked up by the Chiefs. So then I was a full-time athlete. And I moved up to Hamilton, which is, you know, I think about a 7-9 hour drive, and then 3 hours on a ferry from my hometown. So it was a big step for me. I was up there full-time, then managed to make the Māori All Blacks, which was awesome. It was such a cool experience. Our first trip was to Japan, and Japan is such a lovely country. Like, I where when the World Cup was there and people were like, man, I think I might go to the World Cup. I was like, it'll be the best experience you'll ever have if Ireland lose. And unfortunately they did. But like Japan is just such an amazing country. And that was my first ever trip. It used to be the Māori All Blacks used to be a bit of a piss trip, but it had tightened down in about 2013-14. I think camera phones came out in 2010. So I think everyone had to rein it in a fair bit. You know, like that experience was phenomenal and something that I loved. And jeepers, like obviously I wouldn't be able to go back and experience that. It's just a weird thing because it's like everyone was linked together just through like through culture, and that there was the main driving factor, and that was such a cool experience. Yeah, dude, it was cool.
You had a pretty incredible career with the Chiefs. I mean, at times scoring for fun. So what was the catalyst for you moving to join Leinster?
Yeah, so I must have been 23-24. I was pretty much a mainstay. Like I was a starting winger for the Chiefs for, you know, 3 or 4 years. I was always there or thereabouts when it came to All Black selection. They'd always have, like, it's similar here, like before they name a squad, like a 33-man squad, there's a 45-man squad that they go and they send the information, hey, you're being looked at for this, don't book your holidays just in case, like we might, like you're in contention here. So I'd always make that sort of squad, and you know, I'd missed out 2 years in a row, and like it was, I mean, there's some pretty good wingers, you know, like I was up against like Julian Savier, who was playing the best of his rugby at the time. Wasaki Naholo just came onto the scene, Rico Ioane, Ben Smith. Like I could literally have a long, long list of people. And I was always the next one there. And, you know, I got to contract negotiations, and like, I wasn't like, unfortunately I've got a use by date. And, you know, one day I'll be taken off the shelf and there'll be a newer product. So I had to make a decision, and financially it made a lot more sense. And like, I don't care what your motivation is. It doesn't bother me. And that was a huge motivating factor, for the decision to end up at Leinster. And weirdly enough, Leo actually spent a week at the Chiefs. So he had done, like, because he was going into coaching, like he had toured around New Zealand, he'd linked up with a few different coaches, got insights and ideas, and he was there. And I remember, I don't remember vividly, but I remember like he was in the team room and they introduced, oh, this is, you know, Leo Cullen, he's now the head of at Leinster Rugby. And I was just like, where's Leinster? Like, didn't think too much of it. This big polar bear at the back of the room, you know, carried on with my day. And then, you know, how the sort of process goes, like it could be any club in the world. They'll go, okay, for next season, we're lacking a winger. And if you were to pick a rugby team, the first place you look at is New Zealand. Like they've got excess talent. They've got, you know, and that's kind of how it all came about. And I remember it was actually during preseason, because I'd had these talks with, you know, New Zealand rugby and coaches and everything, and I was like, look, like I don't feel it's happening for me. I felt if I was going to be an All Black, I would be one by now. If I can stay around, then yeah, like I'll pick up a cap or two here and there, and you know, when I'm 40 years old in the pub, I can, you know, be waving my flag like, no, I was an All Black, but maybe only a 2 or 3 cap All Black. And so I'll probably also have to work a 9-to-5 job for the rest of my life, you know, after having to run into people for the last blooming 15 years. So I was in pre-season. We're actually doing a train cart, but it was like a touristy thing. So like you'd be in like a little mine cart and you'd have to pedal. I was next to Brad Weber. And my phone just went off, and it was my agent. We had the same agent at the time. And he's like, look, dude, we've just had this offer come through from Leinster in Ireland. And like, you know, we'd had a little bit of communication, so I knew where I could have been going.
So that's the
picture. By then I kind of knew. And he's like, look, we need to have a serious look at this. Like, this is an amazing offer for someone at your age. They've got a lot to offer. And I was literally next to Brad, and Brad's one of my best mates, you know, and I was like, holy shit, dude, like, dude, I could be leaving. He's just like, no, you're not going to leave. Like, we can't leave. You won't leave. We're going to be here forever. And I was like, yeah, like, that's kind of how it all came about. I talked to my parents, my dad, my brother, my sister. They kind of knew where my head was at before that. And then once this offer sort of came through, like, I'd rung a couple of old coaches. I actually rung my first ever Tasman coach, who was now coach of the Crusaders, and I rang him, and he was just like, oh, have you ever thought about coming down to the Crusaders? Like, I'm not coming down to yous. Like, you know, I'm not coming down. Like, but you know, like, I felt like I still had a lot more to add to New Zealand rugby for sure. And I knew if I had stayed and continued to consistently play well and perform, I could have been an All Black, but I wouldn't have been a mainstay. I wouldn't be, you know, like, yeah, who's a, like, you know, like, I wouldn't be there every game. I wouldn't be like, you know, I'd get given like, I'll be given a couple, but that, and that didn't really sit as well as what I was hoping. So I decided to pack up and come over to this side of the world, and I wouldn't look back at all. It's been an amazing journey so far. And, you know, we're bloody loving life in Dublin.
Good. Good. Yeah. You quickly established yourself here as a real fan favorite for a number of reasons, but also because of your affiliate club choice. Can you tell us a little bit?
Yeah, mate, I'm Clondalkin through and through. It was a funny thing, man. And I was getting pestered after my first year about going to different clubs and affiliating myself with different clubs. And like, you're talking, you know, the powerhouses of Dublin rugby. It's like, oh, like, yeah, like, you should come down and like, just like, you know, have, like, I won't say the clubs or anything, but like, oh yeah, like, you know, come down to so-and-so. And I was just like, mate, you guys get, like, you've got 10 current Irish internationals. Like, you don't need me. And then I was in the changing room one day, and it was when Jack McGrath was still there. And Jack was just like, I think it was like his brother-in-law or something. He's like, mate, just say you're from Clondalkin or something. And I was like, where's Clondalkin? And then our media manager, and I was like, dude, Clondalkin's my club. And he's just like, you can't, like, you could pick any club in the world, you pick Clondalkin. And I was just like, there's nothing wrong with Clondalkin. And then, like, I looked into it, you know, they've got a couple of like thriving junior teams. They've got a team, I think, in the third div and stuff. And like, I mean, it's a small club in a place that isn't known exactly for rugby. And I was just like, these are my boys, man. I'm Clondalkin through and through. So, you know, like, I've actually got a contact out there, Greg, and like, I literally tell him, I'm like, dude, like, before COVID, I was going down and watching their, I think it was their under 12s were playing, who were they playing? Cool Mine. So it was Clondalkin, Cool Mine, and, you know, I was standing on the sideline and just watching kids play footy at 7:30 on a Thursday night. And I mean, it's no skin off my nose, an hour of my time. And kids there were just like, why is he here? You know, like, it was a cool feeling. And I mean, like I said, in the last year, I haven't been able to do anything like that. So, but nah, mate, they're my club.
Yeah, I imagine, you know, when they heard out what you decided to do, it was a huge boost for them. And I think there's a lot to be said for what you've done. And I hope going forward that, you know, more of our kind of our international players opt to do something similar and affiliate themselves with a club that perhaps needs a little bit more assistance than others. I think it's a nice way to integrate yourself into the community and into the country. Looking at that, I suppose, you know, you've gone on, had a great career with Leinster. You're here a little over 3 years, and under the residency rule, obviously, you qualified then to represent Ireland. So, you know, how did you find out that you were going to be making your debut, and you know, ultimately, how did that feel?
So I found out that I got selected for the, was it the Autumn Nation series? I think that was the revamped comp. I was actually at the driving range, and I knew that the team was being announced, and I got a call. Normally when I get a call from a number I don't know, I don't answer, because, but I knew the boys were getting phone calls that day, and phone started ringing. I was literally Like, I'm not very good at golf. Like, my consistency is going through the roof at the moment. And I think it's through the 6 month break. It's actually made me realize you don't have to hit the ball as hard as you can for it to go very far. So that's actually a big thing. And that's what I was working on, my consistency and tempo, you know. Phone started going. I was like, oh, geez, who could this be? And I rang and it was Andy Farrell. And just had a convo. He's like, look, you're not qualified for another, 3 weeks to a month, but we'd love for you to come into camp. And I was like, yeah, sweet. Dude, that's cool. I'm absolutely stoked. And, I was into camp after that. I was in there for about 3 weeks, and it's very intense international footy. It's I'm talking, it's 24/7 rugby. You can get so immersed by so much because the pressure is through the roof. And when you go into a new team, everyone pretty much does the same thing on a rugby field but calls it something different. So it's like learning another language. And so that's literally what I was doing. I was just trying to figure out what it was. I was fortunate enough to have, 20 of the Leinster boys there. So I had a lot of people who I could trust. It's not like I didn't trust the bloody Munster boys or the Connacht boys or anything, but 20 people who knew me and what I was like, dude, what do we call this? What do we do? Why are we doing this? Why are we doing that? And they, it was coming from a place of, we all just wanted the best for each other. So, the first 3 weeks was just learning and training away. And then, I got the opportunity to play against Wales in my debut. And, the boys put in a shift. And at home, it was a shame that family and friends or fans, anyone could be there. But it was obviously the highlight of my career, making my debut, and something that you don't forget those days. And dude, I'm excited for the possibility of playing a lot more for Ireland, and that's the plan in the head. And I feel like it's the ball's in my court, whether or not that happens or not. So, dude, I'm excited.
Yeah. I mean, going back to your debut, to score a try on your debut, I mean, it's kind of, it's like a Disney film, really, isn't it?
Yeah. It was a funny, it was awesome, man. That's the only way to put it. And I remember as a scrum goes down, and I knew as soon as you have a scrum in a certain area of the field, depending on the game management, how the game's flowing, minutes on the clock, up or down, exactly what we're going to do from here. You literally would have two options from there. And I went up to Kaelin, who was at 8 at the time, and I was like, this is what's going to happen. Okay. They've got a new 10 on. I think their 10 was on debut as well. He was the Bristol 10, Charlie. I can't remember his last name. He's very good, but he's a small fella. And I'm like, dude, you're going to pick it off the base here. Okay. You're going to sprint at the 10 because the 12 is going to have to look after the 10 here because the 10's normally not the best tackler. They're on their line. They're going to have to come up. He's going to have to look after you. You're then going to just pop it to me, okay? And I'm going to waltz over, and it's going to be – that's literally what's going to happen. And I had to, break it down for him because I knew – he could have scored as well, and I knew he could. And, dude, it just happened. And then, I think that was the final act of the game. And, dude, it was awesome, man. It was just a – it sucks that people weren't there. That's everything. You want to, share those moments with – your loved ones. And unfortunately, there were, 5, 6, 7, 8 debuts over that Autumn Nation series and the Six Nations, and no one's had the opportunity to share it with their families. So that's the only thing that really guts me. But sure, look, there's hopefully a fair bit of time left on the clock and get a few more and get the family over for sure.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, from that, you kind of went on and you earned a place in Andy Farrell's Six Nations squad. And look, I suppose I think, everyone's come to the conclusion that probably didn't meet expectations really as a campaign. But you came under a lot of scrutiny and negativity off the back of that. I mean, how do you kind of deal with that?
Yeah, we felt like we were disappointed and now in the outcome, obviously. I mean, at the highest level, it's the finest of margins.
Absolutely.
At the highest level, and that's literally what it was. The games we lost collectively was 5 points. Like, you know, we win those two games, like, you're talking, we're going from, what was it, third? Like, we're literally going into the final game against England at home with the potential of winning the Six Nations. Like, that, it's so, so close. And, you know, it's cutthroat. Every day you're measured. And unfortunately, like, we weren't able to do it that one. But, like, we're so, so close, man. How to deal with scrutiny? Like, you... It's part of the job description in a lot of ways. And there's not many international players who come onto the scene and are the finished product either. Like, you can't tell me that in the first 10 games, Sexto is the player he is now. You know, you can't tell me in the first 10 games of an international career, Connor Murray was the player he is now. Like, there's such a learning curve, and you're always learning. You're always trying to figure out how to perform better and make better decisions in those times. And, dude, sometimes you need to get whacked on the nose to wake up, and sometimes you need a cuddle, and sometimes, you know, that's all part of it. And where I am now compared to where I was at Six Nations, the lessons learned, the things that you have to understand, like, man, I feel I'm in a lot better place, and I've literally felt like I've been injured this whole fucking year. Like, I reckon I played about 10 games in total. And from where I was at the start to where I feel I am now, my understanding and clarity is so much, has evolved, I feel, tenfold, man. Like, and my body is just letting me down at the moment. It's really, really frustrating and deflating. Yeah. Because you always want to be there, and you always want to play the best, but you have to understand that some days you're going to run over people, and some days you're going to get run over. Okay, like, if I that's the unfortunate truth about it, that you're going to come up against a dude the exact same size as you, who has the same mentality, who really, really wants to run over you. Some days, like I said, you get run over. Some days you run over people. It's a roller coaster, man. There's never a rugby career that's always on the up. So, I'm looking forward to the challenges that the rest of this year presents. That's literally it. Like, I'm so looking forward to another opportunity to represent Ireland and to perform and perform consistently. That's my big thing, man. And like I said, I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait. Can't wait for the world to open up as well. But, like, I'd really like to play again for Ireland.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, we're kind of getting to a point in time now where hopefully we're going to start seeing crowds back at games. I mean, I know your upcoming game that's going to have, is it 1,200 people in there?
Yeah. I think there was a ballot yesterday for the members. Yeah. So 1,200 people get to come. We actually got to go to the... Who did we play last? Ulster game. So, I mean, we were only just allowed in, and, like, the boys who weren't playing, it's just like, well, we actually hang out with all these guys from Monday to Friday. We run and sweat and, you know, all over each other. We get tested twice a week. Like, surely we can go. And we're allowed at our first game. And, I normally hate going to rugby games, 7:30 at night. Like, I'm not a very good spectator. I also get very stressed, and I get a bit animated. And but it was amazing. It was so cool. And the boys actually said it was actually nice to have a few people in the fans screaming at us for once. Even though we were, you know, the boys who they train with, and we're the ones who try and prepare them. So we're really looking forward to having, like, any number of people, fans. Like, I feel that COVID has, like, our lives have been impacted, but nowhere near as much as the general public. Like, we've still been able to go in to work 5 days a week, and it's different. Yes, there's more precautions. Yes, I have to wear a mask when I'm next to someone. Yes, get tested twice a week. Yes, but I get a social interaction every single day with 40 dudes. You know, like, I go in, as soon as I walk in the door, I'm getting abused, and that's just... It doesn't matter what I've... I haven't done anything. But that's just, like, you know, a lot of, like, 99% of the world hasn't had that feeling of going into the workplace in a whole year. So as tough as it is not having crowds, mate, there's people who are struggling a lot more than us.
Yeah. Looking at the current climate and lockdowns and uncertainty inclusive of this, you know, how difficult has it been over the last 12 months to stay motivated?
It has been tough. Currently feels like we've just been on a conveyor belt of rugby, like for literally like 18 months. I feel like we've played Munster about 7-8 times. Like, you know, that's the fixture that you put on a pedestal. Like, yeah, I want to be at the Aviva playing Munster in November. I want to be down in Limerick on Stephen's Day. Like, yeah. And then, like, for these last 18 months, it's like, we're playing Munster again. I thought we played them in the final a week ago. Like, it's, you know, it feels a bit like that. And, like, a rest and recovery will do well. Seeing a bit of normality come back will do everyone well. Like, it's, rugby has been, it's been long, man. It's been a long season. It's been so, so long. And don't get me wrong, boys, like, you get up for games. Like, yeah, that's the easy part, but it just feels like a conveyor belt at the moment, like I said. But jeepers, there's a lot more things we can be complaining about, eh? So you just take it as it comes.
Absolutely. Switching gears a little bit, James, I mean, looking perhaps at kind of the business of sports, specifically in rugby, how important is sponsorship, do you think, for athletes to succeed at an elite level?
Well, sponsorship's the only thing that's keeping us above water at the moment. Like, loyal sponsor, yeah, you know, in terms of, like, from the business. But, like, I guess you have a finite shelf life, which is your opportunity to leverage the fact that you're on the TV, people write about you, whether it's good or bad. People want to associate you with your brand, depending if you're normal or a bit of a douchebag. Some people like that for a business. But, you know, you've got an opportunity while being relevant to leverage yourself for life after rugby. Why wouldn't you try your best to do that? Because, like, if I was to break down my skill set, and I'm very, like, I literally feel like all I know is rugby, but it's a lot more than that. Like, rugby has reared me in such a way where I understand how fortunate we are, but I also understand how, like, I reckon I could go sit in a business meeting and figure out why shit isn't working. Like, just through being in an environment where every single day you're measured and you're told you're playing because you're the best, or you're not playing because you can't do this, you can't do that. You put a bit of pressure on you, you can't deliver. Like, it's an amazing environment to have sat in since leaving school. And it's such a, you know, you can't tell me you walk into an office and you don't, like, even though there is that immense amount of pressure, there's not finger pointing. There's not, you're crap, why are you not doing this? Because I can tell you what, like, all the things that I need to work on, I'm working on them. And whether people see it or not, whether the coaches see it or not, if I tell them I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. Like, that's it at the end of the day. So it's an amazing environment to have been reared. And I'm sorry if I've gone off topic here, but, like, that's how, like, I've got no other skills. I don't, you can throw a calculator in front of me and figure out spreadsheets and that, but I can do that on my phone now. So that there figures out all my problems and questions I can't answer. I just feel like so many sportsmen don't understand what a sports team at a professional and elite level can do to so many businesses around, like, anywhere. Like, it doesn't matter what it is, what a product people are trying to sell, or I feel that sportsmen can add so much value to environments, workplaces, just because of what they've done, you know, in a sporting environment. And once people figure that out, I think they'll, businesses will want to link, want them to sit in on meetings and want them to come in and share experiences and let them know. Because it's a funny thing, like, a lot of people don't like being told they're not good at stuff. But if you come from a place where you all want to achieve and you all are on the same boat trying to go in the same direction, it just makes sense. Like, you have to ask tough questions and you have to be told sometimes. You have to be smacked on the nose every now and then, just to put you back in line, and you have to be cuddled sometimes. Some people don't like being smacked, so they deserve, they're the ones you need to cuddle. Some people don't like being cuddled, you need to whack them. That's without trying to put it blunt, but yeah, man, like it's, you're at a, as a sportsman, you've got so much leverage that you can use. I don't see why you don't.
Yeah. I think you've actually touched on something really interesting there, which is even aside from just the commercial aspect, you know, the transferability of skills, you know, into a professional environment, it's actually, you know, something that's really beneficial. And I think, you know, the studies done would show that the likes of military personnel and elite athletes, you know, joining a workforce adds an awful lot in terms of, you know, leadership qualities or being able to, you know, take direction and in the same manner, you know, be able to offer some fluidity as well and work off initiatives. So I think, you know, certainly for kind of legacy planning, it's a good point you've made there. And then in addition to that, the brand equity attached to, you know, to you as an athlete is obviously significant. You know, for brands to partner with you, it's of, you know, it's of value to everyone.
Mm.
I suppose in the same way, you know, you're in quite a fortunate position in that you're quite recognizable. You're a nice guy to deal with, to be fair. You know, for athletes perhaps that, you know, that aren't quite as outgoing or maybe don't have the same kind of profile, do you think it's difficult for them to kind of gain attention and you know, in the same way, what advice do you give them to support their own personal brands?
It's an interesting question. I know, if I feel like I'm in a safe enough environment, like I'm completely different when I'm in the changing room, man. I'm giving out. I'm, you know, I'm being an absolute bollocks around the boys. But like, if you were moving house tomorrow and I wasn't doing anything, I'll be there. I'll give you an hour of my time. You know, like, dude, I find if you, like, if you're just a nice person, like that's 90% of it. Like, I hate seeing people struggle. I love seeing people succeed, man. Like rugby is, in a way, every year we, Leinster is so fortunate to have an academy that is so, so successful. There are kids every single year who are the top prospects. All of a sudden they're in training with us, which means at the other end of it is 8 or 9 people who miss out. You know, they're not coming back, whether it's through retirement, contractual, they're going to another opportunity, they may not be getting something. Dude, when I know through the nature of that beast that, you know, I'm absolutely stoked when boys sign for other provinces. I might not tell it to their face, I might say it in a roundabout way, but like, I understand that, like, that's the best move for them. And sorry, I go off on these weird ass tangents, I know. But like, yeah, sorry, just to bring it back, you can always add value to so many different businesses, even if you are shy, like a shyer personality. Like, yeah, I can make conversation with a lot of people, and I find it's a lot of it's just asking them about them. I hate talking about myself. If you wanted to know about me, you can listen to the podcast, you know, you can listen. You know, like, you always engage with them, like engage with them on such a personal level. And, you know, what'd you do? Read the paper, man. That's what normal people do. They read the paper, figure out what the headline is, ask them, like, oh, did you see so-and-so? Link stuff together. Oh, you've got a child, you know, like engage with them on a personal level. Don't, like, you know, when you go into these big, you know, not meeting rooms, but, you know, like the sponsors events and stuff. Cool, he might work for, say, Windsor. Windsor's my car sponsor. The main dude I deal with, I know where he's from. I know his missus. I know his dog. I know more than just the car that he gives me for free. You know, like the car, you know, I know more than that. So, like, I find knowing the person on a different level, and I'm, weirdly enough, I'm so bad with names and faces and that, but I've written down, like, the people, because, like, you might not need something from them, and that might be a weird way of putting it, but one day you're going to be in a position where, oh man, what's that fella's name at the paint, what's that painter's name, and like, you're like, I've, you know, you remember that, and they'll go, holy shit, James rang me, he asked me about my dog, like, he, like, where I got my dog groomed or something like that. Like, you know, you need to remember stuff like that, and that's how you engage with them on a personal level. And, you know, if you're good to one sponsor, he's going to go to work and be like, jeepers, man, that dude, like, he's a nice fella, man. He's asking me about my wife, my kids, and when are you going to get home next? Oh, you know, like, all this sort of stuff. Like, they're not just he's not just my car dude, you know. He's not just my, you know, we abuse each other on Instagram all the time. He puts up some sort of rubbish, I'm straight into him, you know. Like, it's get to know people on a personal level, ask them questions. It's not one-way traffic. Like, it's
nice.
Yeah, sorry if I've gone off there, but like, you got to be a person at the end of the day.
I think that's really good advice for anyone at all that's looking to, you know, put forward a public image. You're one of our athletes who, you know, are on the new Sport & Nurse platform, and you've been booked and kind of been able to be able to identify commercial opportunities through the platform. How have you found it as a kind of a tool, and is that something you'd recommend for other athletes maybe to register and sign up?
Yeah, like it makes sense in so many ways. You know, it's like a catalog, you know, like it literally is. And you need to, while you're still, you know, a product on the shelf that people want to associate yourself with, then like you need to put yourself forward. And like, weirdly enough, like I'm not good at putting myself forward for certain things, you know. Like I'm awesome at engaging with people, but like I hate putting myself forward. Man, like it's just one of those things you find it's not natural to a lot of people, but it makes a lot of sense, like, to try. If you can associate, yeah, you might get, like, it's good for both. That's it at the end of the day. Like, you might receive something from it, but obviously you're giving something as well, and your time is precious. So, it makes sense.
Yeah. For you personally, I mean, what are some of the brands that you rely on to perform at your peak?
Brands I rely on.
I know for a fact you have to say Under Armour boots, because we had such a job getting you those before the
Under Armour, obviously. It's boots are very, very tough to come by, I'm not going to lie. It's a different world over here. Normally boots are the easiest thing to come. Like when I was in New Zealand, mate, oh, can I please have some of these? And all of a sudden, the next day delivery, there'll be boots there. Here, you get a blooming car. It's like, what the? Like, people are giving me, I deserve this. Yeah, it's brands that I rely on would be a hard thing to answer. But like brands want to associate themselves with you. Is that the right way of putting it? Without trying to sound like a douchebag?
Yeah. I mean, you know, what are kind of some of the things that you use daily? You know, I see you're a big fan of barbecuing by all accounts.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, that's a weird thing. Like, you know, like social media and all that sort of stuff. And like, I now have a relationship with a fella called Roger at Go Barbecue, who's based up in Northern Ireland. And, you know, I've got a relationship with this dude. Like, I've been up to his barn. Like, you know, he's shown me all these barbecues and stuff. And like, this is just through, you know, like me just kind of being normal, having a conversation. He's like, dude, come up and have a look. And, you know, that was a year and a bit ago, but like, this is all the stuff that so many athletes need to use. And trust me, you get so much stick going into the chain room. If you put up anything like advertising a brand, you have to understand, when you walk into the changing room, these boys are going to peg you down all of a sudden. Oh, cool, mate, got a free barbecue. What do you have to do for that? It's like, I didn't get a free barbecue. Like, this is an Irish business. I am helping out. Yeah, he looked after me. But look, like, we're benefiting each other right now, you know. But that's part and parcel of the territory, you know. Like, it's a funny thing, because it's a double-edged sword, because, man, the boys, even behind your back, you can hear them sniggering in the change. Pricks, bloody pricks.
you've made an impact in more than just your on-field exploits, but also through your ambassadorship to Tackle Your Feelings campaign. Tell us a little bit about that and you know, how you've enjoyed that role.
Dude, it's a cool one. And I actually had a conversation with them last week, and I was like, dude, I don't feel like I do enough for you guys. Like, I feel like I can always do more. Everyone thinks that we're super busy, and we are, but like, if, like, you know, like, today's my day off, I'm pretty much booked up the whole day doing just different things, ticking off a lot of boxes, trying to help people where I can. But like, I always feel like I could do more. And with the Tackle Your Feelings campaign, it's to me, what it resembles is tackling like the stigma of the taboo subject of mental health. And that there is how I see it in my head. And, you know, like it's such a taboo subject to talk about, to, you know, like mental health. Like you can't put a, you can't put an answer on it. You can't be like say you're overweight. Okay, we need to eat better and exercise more. It's not like, Jesus, dude, I'm, you know, I'm struggling. I've got these thoughts in my head and I feel like it's weighing me down. It's just like, well, just think better thoughts. It's just like, no, that's, it's not such a, it's such a complex diet. Like, it's so complex in so many different ways and it changes from person to person. You know, there could be relationship issues, it could be family issues, there could be so many different things. So this is like, you know, that Tackle Your Feelings campaign is trying to provide a platform for you to try and one, identify what could be. Like you don't even need to think that you've got, like you might think you're grand and then you do a couple of things and you're like, jeepers, like, yeah, I'm grand, but like I could easily be better. I could wake up in the morning and feel a lot better by doing basic exercises and activities throughout the day. Like it could be like you're addicted to TikTok. I don't know. Like you spend 7 hours a day on your phone, 6 hours of it is on TikTok. Like you could use that more productively. And like things on the app, try and just help point out basic things. You know, it is cool. And like I said, man, I still feel like I can do more to help. And with it being such a taboo subject and such a, especially in like the environment that I'm in, where I'm surrounded by 40, 50, you know, men, you know, blokes, you know, like, there's so many things that are going on in everybody's lives and a lot of things that people don't want to talk about. And fair enough, man, like I don't want everyone to like, yeah, everyone's dealing with their own problems, family, relationships, whatever, but like you don't need your friends and family to, well, you don't need everyone in the locker room to know those problems, but you've got access to so much resources now to be able to deal with it. And, you know, that's the whole Tackle Your Feelings sort of thing. Dude, this is one of my rants that I kind of go on as I progress as usual. But, yeah, that's the basis in my head behind the whole Tackle Your Feelings campaign, yeah.
Not at all. I think it's a really worthy cause and campaign. And you know, all of us here at Sport & Nurse are delighted to see you involved. Mm. It's interesting, you know, where can they access the, you know, the app or any information around it?
Yeah, so the tackle, so social media is the main one. So it's Rugby Players Island, Tackle Your Feelings. TYF on Instagram will lead you. It has all the information there on where to download the app. It has links to different resources. You know, it's something that, like I said, being such a taboo thing, man, it's like there's no, You don't need people to know that you use this app. Using the app isn't even like, it should be a daily thing you do anyway, whether or not you think or you have any sort of issues. Like it's a checklist, you know, it's a box. It's an easy exercise just to make sure you're on top of yourself and you're doing what's best for you. Cause, at the end of the day, like you got to look after number one, and no matter what situation that is, you got to look after yourself. And that's how you should start your day. Looking after yourself first, and then don't always try and please everyone else. Don't always try and be accepted by everyone else, mate. Look after you first, and you know everything will flow from that.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot to be said for that. And as you said, it's, you know, it's a little bit of a checklist, really. If you you know, compare it, I suppose, to going out and getting physio when you've a pulled muscle or something like that.
Yeah,
you know, we're in a much better place when people can start kind of identifying and comparing the two. I won't keep you for too much longer, James. I suppose longer term or looking ahead, what's your aspirations and goals for the future beyond sport?
That's the million-dollar question that we're all trying to figure out. Look, I have a mentor, so a fella that I go on, you know, he's literally like he's a springboard for me. You know, he's a great dude. Mick Carney actually got me onto him. He's a dude. He works here in Dublin. Very, very smart man. Like, I don't know if he wants me to. Like, I literally have a mentor. I have a person that I go to help me. Like, that's, you know, I don't know how people perceive me or what it is, but it's just like, how is this professional? Why does he need someone to help him? It's just like, well, dude, like, this is a dude I trust, a dude who I think who wants to help me as well. We have a mutual agreement. Like, we're very straight up and down with each other, and he wants what's best for me and I want what's best for him. I don't feel like I can give anything back to him. So I feel it's a weird thing, but he just, you know, he helps guide me and point me in the right direction. Like, he sits me down with different people. I go into his workplace and, like, I'm trying to figure out what I want to do. And it is the toughest thing because I love rugby so much and I know rugby so well. I'm trying to find something I'm passionate about that can try. I know nothing will ever replicate what rugby's done and does and for me. And, dude, I'd say I'm getting closer to trying to figure it out, but it's one of those things. And why I think getting a degree is super, super beneficial and shows a lot of, like, diligence. But how can you, as an 18-year-old, know leaving school, okay, I'm going to study this because I want to be a doctor, without going into a hospital and seeing what a doctor does? Okay, I want to be an accountant. You're telling me at 18 years old, in 4 years' time, you want to sit in an office and look at numbers and screens and all that. And some people do want to do that, but you don't know until you try. So I'm at a stage where I'm booked in to sit in on literally meetings and in different workplaces and seeing how things are run and seeing what they actually do. Dude, I haven't figured out what I want to do yet. I'm trying to find out what I'm passionate about first and going that way about it. And I'm not saying getting people who go to university are stupid, because they're a lot smarter than me. They figure out things a lot smarter than me. I've got a different skill set to them and I want to do it this way. I want to figure out what I'm passionate about, and then I'll eventually go and study something that links up with the two. So I'm just doing it backwards. So, I mean, what's normal, you know? Am I normal, or is, you know? So, yeah, it is a confusing question, a very hard question for me to answer. But, dude, like, I'm open to try and figuring it out. I wish I'd started this journey 4 or 5 years ago. That's always the case. But, like, I'm happy that I am getting on top of it now, because I don't want to get to 33, Leo tell me he doesn't want me anymore, and then all of a sudden I'm working a 9-to-5 at bloody GameStop or whatever, or, you know, down in the local veggie shop. You know, that's, yeah, I can't quite answer it just yet.
Fair enough. But you're working towards it anyway, and I think that's interesting, I suppose, the way you're kind of going about it. You say it's backwards, and I actually think there might be something in that. So maybe looking at kind of reforming the educational system might be...
Yeah, you don't want me at the top of the educational system, dude. Imagine me. Yeah. Weirdly enough, I was actually enrolled at Teachers College. I didn't actually say that. I was enrolled at Teachers College leaving school. I've always had, like, a bit of a passion for, like, kids and helping kids, and you know, teaching was something that I could have done if I didn't get knocked out in my first year and become a semi-professional rugby player. I could have easily had a teaching degree. So funny how that kind of all marries up, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Is that something you think about going back and looking at?
No.
Fair enough.
No, it was a fun. When I was 18 or 19, I worked part time as a, like, teacher's aide. So I was literally I was in a lower decile school. So how kind of, like, you know, you got your decile 10, they get no help from the government, and decile one, or vice versa. Decile 10, you get a lot of help from the government. Decile one, you get minimal. And that's kind of just based on the demographic of the people who go to that school. So I was in the rough school. I was in, like, the very rough school of, in my hometown, a very diverse school, a lot of different ethnic groups, a lot of, you know, that's just the school I was in. And I had to look after a kid. I was one-on-one. I was literally a minder for one kid. And he'd be at school three times a week. You know, his father was in and out of prison. Mum wasn't working. Thursdays he'd come in, he'd always be happy because they would have got their check from the government, so he had breakfast for the next morning. You know, like, it was an eye-opening experience, but I had to make sure this kid was happy and healthy while he was at school and didn't beat the crap out of anyone else. That was literally what I did. And the days where he wasn't there, like, there was such like an emotional connection to this one kid in the school. Like, when he wasn't there, it was almost like, oh yeah, like an easy day. But then it's like, oh crap, like, what's this kid doing? Like, where is he? So some days I'd actually be, you know, in my car trying to find a dude. Like, where are you? Like, but the days he wasn't there and I was in the classroom, I know they were 12-year-old kids, but it was just so, it just wasn't me. Like, I wouldn't be able to do that, man. Like, 6 hours a day, literally, with 30 kids. I thought that that's what I wanted to do, and I thought that was the route that I could have easily gone down, where I thought that I would have such an impact on these 30 kids' lives. But it's not quite like that. So I don't think I'd become a teacher through that experience. But yeah, I don't know what I'll end up doing, man. It'll be something way, way left field anyway, whatever it is. Something you'd never see me doing, I'll do it.
Well, we look forward to that. One piece of advice you would give to any aspiring athletes, what would it be?
Jeepers, dude. Like, it's going to be a roller coaster. Like, there's going to be good days and there's going to be bad days. Like, that's the nature of it. That's the nature of the sport. You have to understand the industry you're competing in you might be training really, really hard, making really, really good gains and feel like you're on top of it. And on the day, for some unknown reason, you don't perform, but that doesn't also define you. Like, yeah, like, you win and you lose. Some games you should have won and you didn't. Figure out why, and then make sure the next time you get that opportunity, you take those opportunities, you know? Like, hey, when I was watching the Champions League final, I'm a City fan, so the big difference, Chelsea took more opportunities. That's literally it. There were a few crosses that went across the box. No one got on the end of them, you know, missed everyone. They took their opportunities, scored a tinny-ass goal in their Champions League. They win the Champions League, you know. Were they the best team throughout the season? No. They got themselves to a final and they scored more goals. And that's literally it. You can't tell me that City won't be in that position again. Like, and that's just a reference for me in my head. Like, this is a roller coaster. I don't think the best team won, but they took more opportunities and they won the game. So I still think City are the best team in Europe. Prove me wrong.
Yeah, that's tough for me as a Man United fan to take, but we'll leave it there. We like to finish with some more kind of lighthearted questions, and with all of our guests from a team sport, we're going to put you in the spot. Ask you a couple of our questions about your Leinster and Irish teammates.
Yeah.
Ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Best dancer.
Tadhg Furlong dances a lot. Weird, not good, but he dances a lot. Yeah.
Worst fashion sense.
James Ryan. He is horrific. He gets so much free clothes. It's like he feels like he has to wear all of his free stuff from Adidas the whole time. And jeepers, it's like they send him they send him nice stuff, but jeepers, he makes it look horrific.
Who's the dressing room DJ?
James Ryan would be one of them, actually. Ken Healy, he's normally on it. If we're going a bit more country, would normally go with, like, Will Connors. He'd be the man. He'd be the one.
Most likely to sleep through their alarm.
Oh, there's a lot of them. Kian Kelleher. He's always late. Yeah.
Least likely to answer their phone.
Kieron Frawley. Mate, he's like, the whole COVID situation, he ended up being a close contact. I rang him to see how he was. He didn't answer. It's like, I know he's not doing anything. He's bloody, you're a close contact. You've got 10 days. Come on, dude. Like, yeah.
Who's the fastest?
There are a lot of very, very quick people, and I am not one of them. I think Tommy O'Brien, one of the young boys, he ran very quick the other day. He ran like a 9.95, chasing down one of the boys. So almost 10 metres a second. So that's on a rugby pitch and rugby boots. Yeah, he was very quick the other day, yeah.
Team Joker.
Oh, there's a lot of them. Who would be the biggest clown, though? Will Connors would be the buttermost jokes, actually, in fairness to him, yeah.
Who's the messiest?
Josh Murphy. He's also a doctor, so, I mean, I don't know what's going on, man.
And then finally, who thinks they're the most intelligent?
I'd think I'm the most intelligent. I'm far from it. It depends what you think. There's actually a really, really smart Jack Dunn. He's one of those dudes who's always thinking. I think he's studying one of the neurological sciences or something at Trinity. He's very, very smart. You could get stuck in a conversation with him and it goes way over your head very, very quick.
That's great. Well, listen, on that note, we'll bring this week's episode to a close. James, thanks so much for taking the time to chat this morning. Best luck going forward, and we're looking forward to seeing you in that Leinster and Irish jersey very soon.
Outstanding. Cheers, Connor.
That's all for this week. Thanks once again to James, to everyone continuing to download and listen to The Sit Down. We truly appreciate your support. If you're interested in partnering with any of our talent, the Sport Endorse platform is now live. You can review and engage talent at www.platform.sportendorse.com or download the Sport Endorse app to the Apple Store or Google Play. Be sure to follow Sport Endorse on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Until next time, take care.